Dip in the Pool, read by Geoffrey Palmer.
On the morning of the third day, the sea calmed. Even the most delicate passengers emerged from their cabins and crept into the heatless January sun. This sudden calm created a more genial atmosphere over the whole ship. By 8 o'clock, the main dining room was filled with people eating and drinking with the assured air of seasoned sailors. The meal was not half over when the passengers became aware that the ship had started rolling again. The movement of the ship became rapidly more violent, and only 5 or 6 minutes after the first roll had been noticed, she was swinging heavily from side to side. At last, the really bad roll came, and Mr. William Botibol, sitting at the purser's table, saw his plate sliding away.
"It's going to be a dirty night," the purser said.
Most of the passengers continued with their meal. A small number got to their feet and threaded their way between the tables and through the doorway.
"Well," said the purser, "there they go."
When the eating was finished and the coffee had been served, Mr. Botibol stood up and carried his cup of coffee around to a vacant place next to the purser. He seated himself and began to whisper urgently in the purser's ear.
"Excuse me," he said, "but could you tell me something?"
The purser bent forward to listen. "What's the trouble, Mr. Botibol?"
"Will the captain already have made his estimate on the day's run? You know, for the auction pool. I mean, before it began to get rough like this."
The purser smiled and leaned back in his seat.
"I should say so, yes," he answered.
"About how long ago do you think he did it?"
"Sometime this afternoon. Around 4 o'clock, I should guess."
"How does the captain decide which number it shall be?"
The purser looked at the anxious, frowning face of Mr. Botibol, and he smiled.
"Well, you see, the captain has a conference with the navigating officer. They study the weather, and then they make their estimate."
Mr. Botibol nodded, pondering this answer for a moment. Then he said,
"Do you think the captain knew there was bad weather coming today?"
"I really couldn't tell you, Mr. Botibol."
"If this gets any worse, it might be worth buying some of the low numbers. What do you think?"
"Perhaps it will," the purser said.
The others at the table had become silent and were trying to hear, watching the purser with that desperately straining, listening look that comes when you are hearing something straight from the horse's mouth.
"Now, suppose you were allowed to buy a number. Which one would you choose today?" Mr. Botibol whispered.
"I don't know what the range is yet," the purser patiently answered. "They don't announce the range till the auction starts after dinner."
At that point, Mr. Botibol stood up.
"Excuse me," he said, and he walked carefully away over the swaying floor. "The sun deck, please," he said to the elevator man.
The wind caught him full in the face as he stepped out onto the deck. He grabbed hold of the rail and stood looking out over the sea.
"Pretty bad out there, wasn't it, sir?"
the elevator man said on the way down. Mr. Botibol was combing his hair back into place.
"Do you think we've slackened speed on account of the weather?" he asked.
"Oh, yes, sir. We slackened off considerable since this started."
Down in the smoking room, people were already gathering for the auction. Mr. Botibol took a chair close to the auctioneer's table. The pool would probably be around $7,000. That was what it had been the last 2 days. Being a British ship, they did it in pounds, but he liked to do his thinking in his own currency. $7,000 was plenty of money. He would get them to pay him in $100 bills, and he would take it ashore, and right away he would buy a Lincoln convertible. He would drive it home just for the pleasure of seeing Ethel's face.
"Hello, Ethel, honey," he would say. "I just thought I'd get you a little present." The auctioneer was standing up.
"Ladies and gentlemen," he shouted, "the captain has estimated the day's run, ending midday tomorrow, at 515 miles. As usual, we will take the 10 numbers on either side of it to make up the range. And, of course, for those who think the true figure will be still farther away, there'll be low field and high field sold separately as well. Now we'll draw the first number out of the hat. Here we are. 512.
The room became quiet.
People sat still in their chairs, all eyes watching the auctioneer. There was a certain tension in the air, and as the bids got higher, the tension grew. Number 512 was knocked down for £110. The next three or four numbers fetched roughly the same amount.
"Lowfield!" the auctioneer called out. "The next number is Lowfield!"
Mr. Botterbowl sat up very straight. He would wait until the others had finished bidding, then he would jump in and make the last bid. He had figured that there must be at least $500 in his account at the bank. That was about £200. This ticket wouldn't fetch more than that.
"As you all know," the auctioneer was saying, "Lowfield covers every number below the smallest number in the range. So, if you think this ship is going to cover less than 505 miles in the 24 hours ending at noon tomorrow, you'd better get in and buy this number. So what am I bid?"
It went up clear to £130. Others, besides Mr. Botterbowl, seemed to have noticed that the weather was rough. 140, 50, there it stopped.
The auctioneer raised his hammer. "Going at 150, 60,
Mr. Botterbowl called, and every face in the room turned and looked at him.
70, 80, 90, 200,
Mr. Botterbowl called. He wasn't stopping now. There was a pause.
"Any advance on £200?
Sit still, he told himself. Hold your breath. No one's going to bid you up.
Going for £200. Going.
Mr. Botterbowl held his breath.
Going. Gone.
The man banged the hammer on the table. Mr. Botterbowl wrote out a cheque and handed it to the auctioneer's assistant. Then he settled back in his chair. He did not want to go to bed before he knew how much there was in the pool. They added it up after the last number had been sold, and it came to £2,100. That was around $6,000. That was enough. He could buy the Lincoln convertible. With this gratifying thought, he went to his cabin. When Mr. Botterbowl awoke the next morning, he lay quite still, listening for the sound of the gale, waiting for the roll of the ship. There was no sound of any gale, and the ship was not rolling. He jumped up and peered out of the porthole. The sea was smooth. The ship was moving through it fast. Mr. Botterbowl turned away and sat down on the edge of his bunk. He hadn't a hope now. One of the higher numbers was certain to win it. What would Ethel say? It was not possible to tell her he had spent almost all of their 2 years' savings on a ticket in the ship's pool. There was no point in pretending that he had the slightest chance now. Not unless the ship started to go backwards. Maybe he should ask the captain to do just that. Offer him 10% of the profits. Mr. Botterbowl started to giggle. Then very suddenly he stopped. For it was at this moment that the idea came. Well, he thought, why not? The sea was calm, and he wouldn't have any trouble keeping afloat until they picked him up. The ship would have to stop and lower a boat, and the boat would have to go back to get him, and then it would have to return to the ship. It would knock 30 miles off the day's run. That would do it. Lowfield would be sure to win then. Just so long as he made certain someone saw him falling over. And he'd better wear light clothes, something easy to swim in. Sports clothes, that was it. He would dress as though he were going up to play some deck tennis. Just a shirt and a pair of shorts and tennis shoes. What was the time? 9:15. Have to do it soon. The time limit was midday. Mr. Botterbowl was frightened and excited when he stepped out onto the sun deck. Nervously he looked around him. There was only one other person in sight, an elderly woman who was leaning over the rail staring at the sea. He stood still, examining her carefully from a distance. Yes, she would do. She would probably give the alarm just as quickly as anyone else. But wait, there were two possible reasons why she might fail him. Firstly, she might be deaf and blind. All he had to do was check by talking to her beforehand. Secondly, the woman might herself be the owner of one of the high numbers in the pool, and as such would have reason for not wishing to stop the ship. Check on it first. Then, provided that the woman appeared to be a pleasant human being, the thing was a cinch, and he could leap overboard with a light heart. Mr. Botterbowl advanced casually towards the woman and took up a position beside her, leaning on the rail. "Hello," he said. She turned and smiled at him. "Hello," she answered. "Check,"
Mr. Butterball told himself, on the first question. "Tell me," he said, "what did you think of the auction last night?"
"Auction?" she said, frowning. "What auction?"
Mr. Bartibald smiled at her and began to edge away. "Got to go and get my exercise now," he said. "It was nice seeing you." He retreated about 10 paces, and the woman let him go without looking around. Everything was now in order. The sea was calm, he was lightly dressed for swimming, and there was this pleasant old woman to give the alarm. It was a question now only of whether the ship would be delayed long enough to swing the balance in his favour. He advanced slowly to a position at the rail, about 20 yards away from the woman. He peered over the side of the ship. It was a long drop. He must jump straight and land feet first. The water seemed cold and deep and grey, and it made him shiver to look at it. He climbed up onto the wide wooden top rail, stood there poised, balancing for 3 terrifying seconds. Then he leapt up and out as far as he could go, and at the same time he shouted, "Help! Help! Help!" as he fell. Then he hit the water and went under. When the first shout for help sounded, the woman who was leaning on the rail started up. She looked around quickly and saw this man dressed in white shorts and tennis shoes, shouting as he went. For a moment she looked as though she weren't quite sure what she ought to do. She drew back a pace from the rail and swung half around, and for this brief moment she remained motionless, undecided. Then, almost at once, she seemed to relax, and she leaned forward over the rail. Soon a tiny round black head appeared in the foam, an arm raised above it, vigorously waving, and a small faraway voice was heard calling something. The woman leaned still farther over the rail, trying to keep the little bobbing black speck in sight, but soon it was such a long way away that she couldn't even be sure it was there at all. After a while, another woman came out on deck. She spotted the first woman and walked over to her.
"So there you are," she said. "I've been searching all over for you."
"It's very odd," the first woman said. "A man dived overboard just now with his clothes on."
"Nonsense!"
"Oh, yes. He said he wanted to get some exercise, and he dived in, and he didn't even bother to take his clothes off."
"You better come down now," the woman said. "And don't you ever go walking about on deck alone like this again. You know quite well you're meant to wait for me."
"Yes, Maggie,"
the old woman answered, and allowed herself to be led away across the deck.
"Such a nice man," she said. "He waved to me."